We are continuing our series on the book of James, and we're in chapter 4, and I invite you to turn there. Chapter 4, verses 13 through 17. An old sailor took a group of young people boating for the day. One young man bragged the whole way about all he knew about the sea. Every time the old sailor gave instructions, this old man would say, or interrupt with his supposed knowledge. And every time the old sailor would say something, the guy would one-up him. But a little while later, a strong storm stirred, and the old sailor began to hand out life jackets. And all at once, this young man cried out, "Hey, where's mine?" And the old sailor replied, "Don't worry, son. You don't need a life jacket, because with a head as full of hot air as yours, you will float forever." And we laugh about that, and, you know, we tell a story, but as Christians, maybe sometimes we are a little like that, that we know it all, that our heads are full of hot air and how we go about life, and that we think that we'll float forever because of our own doing. I think one of the things in our Christian life that I struggle with, and maybe you struggle with, is our self-reliance, that little bit of pride that seeps in, to believe something that we are not. And most of us grew up being told to make plans, the subject of our text today. I know I heard often was these words, "You fail to plan, you plan to fail." Or maybe grew up with, "Measure twice, cut once." Or financial calculations for a retirement plan. Now, there's nothing wrong with planning. In fact, the Bible suggests that we plan. But what James is talking about here today is this making plans apart from God, that when we are his children, we are irresponsible and we don't act like we are one of his children. So planning is good, and we should plan. But why is James addressing this? Remember that James' audience was believers, not non-believers. He was suggesting that they were making plans like they were lost, leaving God completely out of the equation. And in verse 13, he says this, after last week Richard talked about the Ten Commandments and some of the things, he says, "Now listen, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go to this or that city, spend a year here, carry on business, and make money." And James is addressing business people, though it applies to others. He says, look what you're doing. Look what you're doing with your mouth. You're saying, today or tomorrow we will go. My plan. And we will go to such and such city. And this is how much time we're going to spend there. We're going to spend a year there. And the kind of activity they're going to do is they are going to engage in business. And he goes on, he says, then you also talk about this business, and you said that it's going to have certain results. You're going to make a profit. I think about those words, and I think how many times I have said something very similar. That we will do this, and we will go there, and we will spend this much time, we will engage in this, and this is what the end result is going to be. But there's been enough wearing of tread on my tires of life that I realize that doesn't work so well. I've tried this. It hasn't worked out that well. But what James is saying is that these believers were making plans like the world. There's no difference. That they were giving God their direct declaration of independence. That we are independent. But we are not to make plans independent of God. We're not sinful people who have not been coming before God and accepted Jesus as our Savior. We are believers now. And when we make plans on our own, we are basically saying, hey, God, you know, I trust you for my church life. And when we have church meetings, I trust you for that. And we're going to pray for God's will in that in my life. I trust you for Sundays and for Wednesday nights and other times. But here's the real deal, God. I need you or I want you to stay out of my business the rest of the time. Now, I know you said, Lynn, we would never say that. No, we would never say that. But we might act like that. So James says we need to use God's wisdom to help us make plans and decisions. That we need to call on God all the time, not just the hard times. Because one thing that we need to realize is this, and what I thought about this week was this, we are not independent. We are dependent. God is independent. We are not. And so when we make plans, not just on a Sunday morning or a Wednesday evening or something that has to do with church work, but this work and activities of our lives, and then something happens, we get thrown, our plans happen, and then we get thrown a curveball, and we're like, whoa, what happened? Our plans were fixed. And he says, you guys live like the world. Then he goes on in verse 14, he says, well, why? You don't even know what will happen tomorrow. What is your life? You are a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. He's saying, you don't even know what's going to happen tomorrow. How many people know what's going to happen tomorrow? No, we don't know. How many think you know what might happen tomorrow? Yeah. Okay, but we really don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. We might not even be here tomorrow. Ooh, that's kind of a thought. But he suggests that we're as fragile as mist and vapor. And in our lives, as we start thinking about things that we have, and we wonder about some of the disappointments in our own lives, you know, the house that we didn't get because the loan was not approved, the raise that we had depended upon and maybe even spent money already based on that, for some reason did not come. We can't control the elements, can we? The older I get, and I'm not that old yet, by the way, but the older I get, I realize how fast time goes. I remember when I was little, I mean, time just seemed to sit there, didn't it? When you were little, time just sat there. It didn't move. We got impatient with life. If I was only here, if I was this old, I could be that. If I was 16, I could drive. If I was 21, I could do this. Anyway, all these things we think about. But the older we get, we realize that how time flies. Can you even imagine that my wife has put up with me for 27 plus years? She might say time didn't fly, but I don't know. I mean, can we tell the future? I mean, just think if we could tell the future. Just think if we could know what's going to happen tomorrow. We would have bought some Amazon stock years ago. Or Bitcoin. We would have maybe even said the right thing to the right person at the right time to a loved one before they died. Maybe we'd have avoided a wreck or a storm. Time is uncertain. And life, though different perspectives, is short. And yet we want to use our knowledge and our wisdom for God. I mean, instead of God. And I'll tell you what, one of the biggest, the best inventions in my lifetime, for me personally, is this. GPS. I don't know what we did without GPS. You know, there's Google Maps, and now my son tells me about this new app called Waze. You know, he said, Dad, it helps you that when you're driving down the road, it already tells you which way to go based on construction and different accidents and detours. And I'm like, man, that's really cool. See, I love GPS because GPS tells me which way to go. And with the newer versions now, they even tell you where the traffic is bad and there's detours. And GPS is so amazing because you just plug it in and go. And I thought about that. I thought, wow, GPS, it's amazing. And then I thought, well, GPS really is this. It's someone up above or some other information coming to give you the information you need to get from point A to point B. And so what I do is when I get in the car, I punch in exactly where I go, and I relax. I have to be honest with you. I'm not as stressed as I used to be. I relax because I know when I push that button and it says go, it tells me exactly which way to go. If you have the right address. And I thought, wow, that GPS is a little bit like God, isn't it? I mean, God has the high view, and we're just in our cars driving along. And he understands some of the routes and some of the things that are happening in our lives. And so we trust in our GPSs. And I wonder, as much as we trust in our GPSs that have a high view, how much do we trust in God who has a high view in our own lives? Can you imagine God at times looking down at us and seeing us fumble our way through and see things happening, not asking him? Oh, we do ask him. We ask him when we get in big, big trouble. We're in deep weeds. We call 911 God. And God is only there when we need him. And so a lot of times we plan life apart from God's will. And then verse 15 it says, instead, you ought to say, if it is the Lord's will, we will live and do this or that. If the Lord wills, we will live and do this or that. God willing, my plans. When we say God willing, we're submitting our plans to a greater will, to know more than I know, to realize and to actually acknowledge that God is more powerful than we are. So he says, you ought to say, if God wills. This week, I had the privilege of visiting Norman Zimmerman. It's always an experience when I go visit him. I learn a lot about a lot of things in history of our church. But at the end of our conversation, I was going out the door, I said, hey, Norman, I'll see you on Sunday. And Norman says, Lord willing, and the creek doesn't rise. I'm like, okay, Lord willing, and the creek doesn't rise. Okay, so I love that. Now, I have to confess to you something. I really appreciated what Norman said there, but I will tell you, I didn't always appreciate that. I remember back in my early 20s at the church we were going to, or I was going to, there was a guy there that used that language. And I have to just confess to you, it bothered me. It bothered me. He always used this, well, God willing. And I'm like, do you have to say that? God willing? And I always wondered, why did that bother me so much? Why was I not liking those words, God willing? Now let me just say, this guy was sincere. This guy lived his life according to God willing. And I have to tell you, I had an honest moment several years later. And I reflected on why that bothered me. And I realized it was because of this. I was not living a God-willing life. I was living a Sunday morning God-willing life. I was living a, when people were around that I was concerned about and they went to our church, I was a God-willing person. But I wasn't a God-willing person in all the areas of my life. And so James says two important things about God. If God wills, we will live. I think back to the Apostle Paul in his life. I think about some of the times that he has said things like this. In Acts 18, he says this, as Paul left Ephesus. He said, I will return to you again if God wills. Then in Corinthians 4:19, he writes, I will come to you soon if the Lord wills. Now, I've thought about Paul and his life. Have you thought about Paul looking back through his life when he said, if the Lord wills, was really important in his life? Because most of the time, when he went from one town to the next town, he didn't know if that might be his burial place. That this was in the hands of God. And I thought, well, that's not only for Paul, that's for us. That we are in the hands of God. And God will decide how long we live and when we die. And so God willing to Paul, and God willing to Jesus on the cross when he said, not my will, but your will be done as a man. And he goes on, he says, if God wills, we will do this or that. He teaches us that the activities and accomplishments of our lives are in God's hands. God governs what we accomplish. When the businessman was saying the results at the end about making a profit, this was in God's hands. Our success is in God's hands. And then in verse 16, he says, as it is, you boast and brag. All such boasting is evil. In Psalms 14:1, it says this, only fools say in their hearts, there is no God. But let me tell you, an even bigger fool is one who believes in God and then lives as if God has no power or influence in their lives. And James was dealing with people who were boasting about all kinds of things. They were making themselves God. They were boasting. And this word boasting really describes what we could maybe call peddling. It would be an example of like boasting like a medicine man that would be coming through town years ago, setting up their wares for everyone to see and proclaim that this potion or this here or that will cure whatever your ware, whatever's going wrong in your life. It will heal you of anything. It's given an impression, boasting is giving an impression that is not real. To do things that we cannot do. And he says it's evil to think that you have all the facts. But he says if you're going to brag, if you're going to boast, then boast about God. Not about how much is in your bank account, not how smart you are, not your physique, not who you think you are, but bragging about knowing God. And he goes on, last part, he says, and anyone then who knows the good he ought to do and does not do it, sins. I find this interesting. I find this interesting at the end, the 17, he says, failing to do what is right, not doing what is wrong. That was in James 1 and last week. This sin of neglect, of not doing something you know you're supposed to do, and we continue to live in rebellion and do what we want to be, that we become the captain of our ship. And so, there was a story of a man who sold a mule. As he was taking it across town to deliver it, he met up with one of his friends. And his friend said, hey, where are you going with that mule? He said, I'm going to sell it. He said, you should say you're going to sell it if it's the Lord's will. He said, ain't no Lord's will about it. I've already sold the mule. I'm just taking it across town to deliver it and pick up my money. He said, you ought to say, if it's the Lord's will, I'm going to sell that mule. He said, no Lord's will about it. The man has agreed. I'm just simply delivering the mule. And I'm going to pick up my money. After they argued for a while, the man went on his way. By now he was running late, and so he decided to cut across a man's pasture. The man saw him, got angry, and shot and killed the mule. When he did, the mule fell over on the man and broke one of his legs. An hour or so later, he limped up to his friend with whom he had been arguing, and the man said, "Hey, what happened to you?" And he said, "Well, I argued with you so long, I was running late, I cut across the man's pasture, and he shot and killed my mule. The mule fell on me and nearly killed me, and I believe he's broken one of my legs." The man said, "Well, what are you going to do now?" He said, "I'm going to go home, if it's the Lord's will." You see, few people refer to God's will. There's even fewer people who prefer God's will. But the wisest thing for us to do is to defer to God's will. This candle has been burning here through the sermon. And James talks about our life being a mist, about being smoke. For all of us who knowingly or unknowingly put God at the margins, this candle's a reminder about our lives. You are smoke that appears for a while and then vanishes. And so James is encouraging us to submit to God's will, complete surrender of one's tomorrow. And to James, he would say, to live life as one who thinks they know it all, who doesn't need a life jacket because they're filled with hot air, pride, playing God is folly. Instead, we are urged to live life with God willing over everything. And when you do, you cannot go wrong. Who holds your tomorrows? So you can refer to God's will. You can even say, "Lord willing." You can say you want to do God's will. But the most important thing, the absolute most important thing, is to defer to God's will. And when we do, he doesn't promise us a rose garden, but he promises that we are in his will. I can't think of a better place to be. Can you?